Welcome to Ready, Set, Practice, the podcast designed to help new PAs navigate their careers with confidence. I'm Dr. Jennifer Orozco-Cole, the Chief Medical Officer at the American Academy of Physician Associates. And today's episode is all about leadership. Stepping into your role as a new PA isn't just about clinical skills. It's about embracing professionalism, advocating for yourself and your patients, and finding opportunities to grow. We're joined today by Claire Kyriakos, the Chief Advanced Practice Officer at Stanford Healthcare. Claire has a wealth of experience in clinical leadership, advocacy, and performance improvement, and she's passionate about helping PAs step into leadership roles early in their careers. Claire, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jen. Thank you. Thanks so much for this opportunity.
Absolutely. We're excited you're here. So maybe you can start by sharing just a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to take on a leadership role as a PA.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. I've been a PA now for about 18 years. 17 years. And it's just been an amazing journey. But when I think about this transition to leadership, it really started with my first role as a PA. I started my career in pediatric surgery in an academic center, and I was one of the first PAs within the team. So you can imagine a lot of clarifying what is the role of a PA, talking to my teams about how I can contribute, establishing workflows, how I work with residents and my attending physicians and the entire interprofessional care team. But by having that opportunity, it also exposed me to so many elements of the healthcare system that I had no idea, right? Like, they were so excited to have a PA on the team, so they started pulling me into different quality improvement initiatives or task forces, anything that they were trying to solve. And I was like, sure, yeah, I can help with that. You know, optimizing discharge workflows, that's something that we could do with my clinical expertise. But being on those task forces and hearing how every single problem, there's so many elements behind the scenes that we as clinicians may not be aware of, something we don't learn in PA school, how like the Epic informatics system triggers one system and other departments to be aware of what's next in the workflows and just all of the different system challenges. And so it was an amazing opportunity for me to just understand the wealth of expertise that goes into the one-on-one patient interaction that we as clinicians have and value. And I realized very early on through those opportunities that I love this work. It really excites me to not only be able to make that change with a one-on-one interaction with a patient, but really at scale. So how I can help make improvements and initiatives that impacts not just that one patient, but the entire, you know, all the patients on that unit as an example. So that's kind of what triggered my passion for these quality improvement projects and initiatives and led me down a path of saying, hey, I want to try to transition into a formal leadership role at some point in my career. And so as a clinical PA, I just sought out those different opportunities to say, hey, oh, let me help with that. Let me learn about that. And then it just kind of got me to where I guess where I am right now.
It's such a good place where you are right now. And, you know, as someone who has been through your journey and, you know, in this chief role, it's such an amazing honor to be in that role. And, you know, I think 20 plus years ago, when I started, I could have never imagined this type of role. So such a great accomplishment. So maybe you could share a little bit as PAs look ahead, you know, well, what pathway do I have for my career? I think a lot of PAs get stuck in, you know, I'm a clinician. And so they have narrow blinders on and they live in that clinician bucket, but really healthcare has changed so much. And, you know, you have a skill set as a PA to make tremendous influence in a health system. So what are some pathways for career advancement for PAs? And, you know, what skills do I need to, you know, succeed in those roles?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Jen. Like, the role of the PAs, the PA role has just evolved over the last, 10, 20 years. I really appreciate what you said. You know, I'm so grateful to be in this role as a chief advanced practice officer, supporting advanced practice nurses and physician assistants. And so I can't imagine, just like you 20 years ago, I would have never imagined a role like this, being there in executive leadership to support our PA profession. And I think that is just a testament to what's actually happening within our profession as PAs, the evolution, how we're seeing more and more PAs in leadership. We're seeing more and more PAs taking on the education track, research, quality improvement. I mean, we have PAs going to space, right? So it's just amazing to see how the role has continued to kind of penetrate the healthcare system, evolve, and let other healthcare professionals really truly understand the capabilities that a PA can bring to the entire system. So I think the world, you know, the opportunities for a PA is just phenomenal. And for an early career PA, there's just so many pathways to take depending on their clinical interest or passion, whether it's education track, research, you know, the ones that I mentioned. So I think it's just finding what your passion is. And fortunately, many, many PAs like you have paved the way to help open up those opportunities for the future PAs.
Yeah, and so true. And yeah, in my role as CMO, you know, I get to see across the healthcare spectrum, and what PAs are doing is tremendous. I mean, I remember during COVID times speaking with a PA who helped create the COVID vaccine and research it and develop it. And it was like, oh, how many people know that a PA was involved in doing that? And so it's things like that. And really, they're individual entrepreneurs, they're innovative, they work in public health, they do research, the education. I mean, just possibilities are endless. So I would encourage any new grad PA or early career PA to be not put yourself in the narrow box and, you know, let your skills fly. So let's talk a little bit about professional responsibility, mm-hmm. right? And so I think when we come out of PA school, which is the hardest thing you'll ever go to, it's all about clinical, 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 clinical. If I'm a good clinician, that equals success. And I think when you graduate, you sort of find out, oh, there's a little bit more to knowing the clinical and the diagnosis and the treatment plan and everything else that goes along with it. You actually have this professional role in the organization. So maybe talk a little bit about your experience with that and you know, why that's important to really build trust and successful relationships with patients and colleagues.
Yeah, that's a really, really great point. You know, it kind of brings me back to the famous quote from Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility. And I think as PAs, it is our responsibility, right? That we have this opportunity to educate the team that we work with on what is our role as a PA, our patients that we're interacting with. We want them to understand and have a positive experience from that one interaction they had with us as PAs, because people are still somewhat developing what they think about PAs. What are PAs in the healthcare system? And so, unfortunately, we don't have such a rich history there where the, you know, everybody already knows what it is, what it means to be a PA. In fact, it can look a little different how health systems utilize the role. And so I do think it's our responsibility as a PA to ensure that we're collaborating interprofessionally, that we're communicating in an effective manner and representing the profession at the highest caliber at any interaction that we can. And when I think about the value that PAs bring to a healthcare system, when we always talk about it, right? It's the concept of team-based care. And as PAs, that is exactly what we're striving for, being integrated into that team and optimizing not just your role, but the entire care team, so we can deliver that best, you know, the best care for that patient. And so you can't do that alone. So it's not about you only. It's not about what you know. It's about how that then translates to the team that you're working with, how effectively you communicated with them, and honestly, also how you made them feel during that process. This is, it's a team that you work with every day. And so that professional collegiality and collaboration is so essential in being successful in your role, being effective in your role, and really representing, I think, the PA profession.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this old sort of outdated mentality in medicine was this hierarchical path. And those days are going away, albeit slowly. But, you know, you as a PA really make those autonomous decisions. And sometimes it may be the PA leading the team. Sometimes it may be a nurse. Sometimes it may be a physician. You just don't know. Right. And you and how you interact with breaking down those, there's no hierarchical rules around here, but really focusing on the collaboration and the best care for the patient. So true. So true.
I love that. Breaking down those barriers.
Yes, absolutely. And let's talk a little bit right now about being told no. I have been told no. I've talked about it in previous episodes. And that sort of was what lit my fire when I was very young and for a new grad PA was all the times I was told no when I knew what my skill set and capabilities were. I knew my education and training. So can you think of a time where you were told no, but you knew you had the ability, skill set, expertise to do so? And then how did you handle that situation?
Yes, it's taking me back to memory lane, and it is so frustrating. So, you know, I talked a little bit about how I got exposed to different like quality improvement initiatives and things like that early on in my career as a PA. And I would be involved in these informal leadership roles and be on volunteer on different committees and task forces. But, you know, the moment I would ask the question of like, okay, well, can I like chair that task force or be the official lead on, you know, on the charter? I just wanted to see my name as the lead, co-lead, you know? It was a different reaction, right? Well, should we have a PA actually co-leading this effort? The teams definitely value the expertise that we as PAs were bringing or that I was bringing to that team. But it was a little bit of a question or a hesitation when it came to officially being formally in a leadership role. And that kind of continued for a while and honestly continues to this day, although I do think it has improved over the last decade or so. I would apply to formal leadership roles, like clinic manager roles, lead roles for quality. And I was constantly told no, like literally declined and said, hey, you don't qualify for this like clinical leadership role. In fact, I then decided to go down the path of pursuing an administrative fellowship. And I went and applied to be an administrative fellow in different healthcare systems. And I was told that I don't qualify because I was a clinician. So I was really confused. Like in one, you know, one avenue, I'm too much of a clinician, and in the other, right, I'm not enough as a PA. And it was really devastating, you know, and I felt like stuck. I felt like I know this is what I want to do. And I see other amazing clinicians being given these opportunities and doing so well and making healthcare better. And I felt like I could do it too. And I wanted to do it. And it wasn't really there. And in fact, at that time, what I had to do was step away from kind of the typical PA role. I moved into a quality improvement consultant role as a performance improvement advisor, just to kind of give me a different experience and add to my resume in non-clinical or non-APP PA related role and have that on my resume to just make my candidacy a little bit more promising as I was applying for these leadership roles. So it was really tough. And I, you know, I took a pay cut to move into that type of role, but I knew for me that was the right thing to do just to round out how people perceived me. And that was the only way I could kind of break that mold and get myself into a formal leadership role. Along with expanding, like I did pursue my MBA at that time as well, just to, again, broaden my skills and expertise. Like I think it's important to acknowledge that as PAs, we can be leaders, but we also need additional training. And it's good to go get that, whether it's through certifications or degrees. But for me, I really wanted to round out kind of my business acumen. And that's why I pursued my MBA. And again, just trying to broaden how I was perceived as a candidate in health, in a healthcare administrative role. So then that's how I finally moved to Stanford Healthcare, where I work now. And that was a role where they, at that time, finally marrying a clinical PA role with administration. And when I saw that job, I was like, this is a dream come true. It's like the moment I've been waiting for. And I've been here for 10 years.
Well, in life, I truly believe after all my years of experience that everything sort of happens for a reason, right? And I encourage young PAs to always remember, sometimes you just can't see it yet, but everything, your path and where you're going, and you're right, there's no clear way there. And, you know, now through that work and you making those decisions early in your career, not getting frustrated and completely given up by being told no. Now, here you are, the chief advanced practice officer of, I forget the number, I think it's 1500 off the top of my head, probably even
900
more.
Now, actually.
Okay, we're still close. We're still close to the 1000 mark, but of multiple disciplines. Not only are you responsible for PAs, mm-hmm. you're also responsible for all of the APR runs. You're responsible for all of operations, strategy, quality improvement, outcomes, you name it. And it really is achievable for folks. So, you know, you're absolutely right. In terms of like finding and walking that path, it just leads to beautiful things. And here you are. So,
and Jen, you know what, on that note though, I think that's why it's so important for us as PAs, like going back to that responsibility, like everything we do impacts other PAs that are coming into the profession or who are also having similar challenges, you know?
Yeah.
So I do think it's so important to give back or figure out how you could continue to mentor or help support other people who are also facing similar challenges.
Yeah. My gosh. So true. The decisions you make, thinking about the larger picture, right? It isn't just the little world. And a lot of people do this, not just PAs, right? But people make decisions and they're like, well, it doesn't affect me. I live here in my space and I'm happy in my space. But you actually do. You affect the entire profession, your patients, your health system. And that power of influence is real. And so always remember that in those decisions. People say things, and I'm getting off topic now, but like, oh, it doesn't matter if we call ourselves physician associates, right? We did a name change a couple of years ago, but it does. It really does, because it sets the tone for all the people ahead of you, all the people around you. And it's really, really important that you think about that as you advance in your career. And one of the things, and you know, we're getting close to time here, but one of the things I wanted to talk about was preceptorship, speaking of influence, right? And so we know preceptors are hard to come by. And a lot of, when I was a director of advanced practice, I used to get a lot of calls to say, I want to take students, but like, can I take students? I've only really worked here, you know, 6 months. I've really only been a PA 6 months. Like, what's the right time? What do I need to know? Like, how do I, you know, it's so important, but how do I know when I can become a preceptor and how many, you know, how many people I can take on? So what's your experience there?
That's a really great question, especially nowadays, you know, where I think preceptor burden is real and we are facing challenges and really even having folks sign up to be a preceptor just because of how clinically demanding their own roles have become. So I think it is super, super important to be able to precept when you can. Again, going back to the concept of giving back to our community, giving back to the PA profession. But of course, as a clinician, you want to make sure you are proficient, at least in your own clinical specialty. Of course, we're in a learning journey and you're going to continue becoming and growing as an expert, but you don't have to wait till you're full expert to start precepting, but you do need to know, you know, how you need to be proficient in your specialty, but also understand the workflows and the policies and procedures within your own system. So typically in our organization, we do say you have to be at least employed for 1 year to be kind of eligible to precept. But again, that's really based on your own kind of clinical decision of, do you feel ready? Does your team or supervisor feel like you're also ready? So it is a personal decision to make, but just keeping those considerations in mind that you want to be able to actually contribute to that person you're precepting in an effective way. And so make sure that you are able to offer that by being fully trained yourself. But I think sometimes we may get ahead of ourselves and want to precept sooner. And another avenue to think about is maybe you're just eager to give back and you can mentor. Mentoring is very different from precepting someone. And there's no, it's never too early to start mentoring. We have third year PA students mentoring first year PA students. So even as a new grad working out in the field, you could start mentoring different PA students, talk about these career avenues, the job, recruiting, finding the right job. There's so many ways you could still influence and support the role.
Yeah, no, so good. And I remember in my early days, it was like, I could probably take one every couple of months. But by the time I was more of a seasoned PA, I had multiple students, I had medical students that were precepting with me. And so, you know, it's something that evolves over time. But I would say agree, it's something to give back. And there's so many different ways to give back. So tell me, as we close here, Claire, where do you see the PA profession heading? Mm-hmm. And how can new grads really be part of that future?
Mm-hmm. I think the PA profession is the future. When you think about how healthcare is evolving, you know, we hear a lot about the quintuple aim and what are we charged as a healthcare industry to help improve outcomes, improve patient experience, improve the entire well-being of the clinical team, right? And financial sustainability. So all of these elements and health equity. So all of these elements, when I think about those five pillars, that's exactly what PAs do. That's what PAs bring to the table. So PAs are an integral part of the PAs are an integral part of the future of healthcare. I think we need PAs to be able to continue to meet the demands of access that our patient population, our communities need today. And so whether PAs like it or not, we are part of the future. So as far as new PAs coming in, just embrace this, be ready. You know, we have such an important and powerful and influential role that we get the opportunity to serve in. And so it's an exciting, exciting profession to be part of, especially as we continue to grow within the industry.
Yeah. Well, Claire, it has been such a pleasure talking to you today. And that wraps up this final episode of Ready, Set, Practice. Throughout the series, we've explored key issues affecting new and early career PAs, from job search and contracts to leadership advocacy and career growth. Claire, thank you for sharing your insights and experience and your tremendous accomplishment as a Chief Advanced Practice Officer. Your journey is an inspiring example of how PAs can step into leadership and shape the future of healthcare. To continue your professional development, explore more resources on AAPA's Learning Central, where you can also claim CME for this episode. And if you found this series valuable, share it with your colleagues and stay engaged with AAPA for future content and opportunities. And finally, remember, your career is a journey, and every step, whether big or small, moves you forward. Keep learning, keep leading, and keep shaping the future of PA practice. Thanks for listening.